Hello, and welcome to Why Wars Happened,
a weekly podcast where we talk about what led to war in history. I'm your host, Emily Ross, and today we're going to be discussing the things that led to the American Revolution, with a focus on Virginia this season.
Okay, so where we left off in the last episode was that the people of Virginia had had enough of being attacked by the natives. Their governor, Governor Berkeley, wasn't doing anything about it. He had assembled a force of 500 men and horses to go out and attack the tribe that had been raiding the farms around Virginia. But at the last moment, he disbanded the men and told them to go home. The people went to the governor and begged for permission to go out and attack the natives themselves. The governor refused to listen to these requests, cursed at them, and declared that if anyone came to him with any more requests like this, they would be punished. It wasn't long before a group of natives lined up on the riverbanks by Charles City, Virginia. When the people of Charles City got wind of this, they immediately gathered with arms at the ready to defend themselves. All they needed was someone to lead them. Nathaniel Bacon was a young man who had come to Virginia from England with the hopes of making money for his family. He did this by hunting beavers and selling them. Beavers sold for a lot of money at the time, so it wasn't really a bad idea. To get the beavers, he did what most men did. He rented beaver land. Governor Berkeley himself owned almost all of the beaver land in Virginia, so Nathaniel Bacon paid him a monthly fee to hunt on his land. This made him friendly with the governor, and perhaps someone the governor might listen to. In addition to this, he was well-educated, very good at public speaking, and he was distantly related to the governor's wife. The governor had also placed him on the governor's council. His friends had proposed his name to the group of men gathered in Charles City. The men agreed to meet with Bacon, and Bacon's friends, with a little push, were able to convince him to row across the river and talk with the men. Once he got there, the men gathered around him, cheering, "Bacon! A Bacon! A Bacon!" and declared him as their leader. He accepted the role and began a speech in which he promised that if the governor told them to disband, they would disobey and march out against the natives anyways. Their first task was to head to the next town over, New Kent, which was about a six-hour march. Before they left, Bacon wrote a letter to the governor informing him of what they were doing and assuring him that they had no intention of overthrowing the government. They just wanted to defend themselves. In addition, he enclosed a payment for the land rent he owed to the governor. Bacon's own home had been raided and the person he worked for had been murdered by the natives. So this was just as personal for him as it was for the men who marched with him. On their way to New Kent, they passed through friendly native territory. This was the territory of the Pamunkeys. Governor Berkeley had hoped to use the Pamunkeys as spies and allies in the war, and he was furious when he learned that not only were these men acting in mutiny against him, they had also driven the Pamunkeys off their territory. The Pamunkeys had fled at the sight of the rebel army. Then, he learned that the men of New Kent had joined Bacon's army, and together they were marching out to find the murdering tribe. In the letter that Bacon had written to the governor, he asked for one thing: official permission. That was it. They truly didn't want to act against the governor. They wanted to act within the law and within his permission. The governor, fuming with rage at this disobedient army going around mucking up all the governor's plans for the war, refused to give this permission. Instead, he issued a proclamation declaring Bacon and his men rebels. He offered to pardon any who would lay down their weapons and return home. The rebels, in turn, refused to lay down their arms. They asked whether they should return passively to their homes to be slaughtered by the natives. The governor had given them no choice. The natives were coming, and they had to protect themselves. They cried out that they preferred to die in battle than be sneakily murdered in their beds. They said that if they lie still, they are destroyed. If they defend themselves, they were called rebels and traitors. And that if they must be hanged for killing those who would destroy them, then let them be hanged. That would be far better than to lie at the mercy of their, quote, barbarous enemies. So, the rebel army continued on and plunged into the forest where the Susquehannock had traveled. When Governor Berkeley heard that the rebels had refused him, he decided to take stronger action. He gathered a group of 300 men on horseback to pursue the rebels, and off they went to stop them. But when they got to the James River, they realized that Bacon and his men were far away. So he decided to turn his men around and return to Jamestown, where he would wait for Bacon to return. A few days later, he issued another proclamation declaring Bacon and his men rebels. Again, he offered to pardon any man who would return to his home. The rebellion was spreading. People in multiple towns all across Virginia were arming themselves. The people overwhelmingly supported Bacon. The governor hoped the rebels would accept his pardon and the rebellion would be stopped. In the meantime, he kicked Bacon off of the governor's council and seized his home and all of his belongings. Bacon's own father declared that he would no longer pay any of Bacon's debts. Nathaniel Bacon was already paying for his act of rebellion. As they marched deeper into the woods, food became scarce and shelter was desperately needed. They found groups of natives along the way, but nearly all of them were unwilling to help. Most likely, they didn't want to be seen as an ally of either the Susquehannock or of Bacon's army. Bacon had been counting on the help of these tribes who had historically been allies with the English, but without their help, the men began to grow hungrier by the day. The rebel army was facing starvation. Now comes a part where the rebels meet their battle, but it wasn't with whom they had expected. Deep in the forest, they had come across a tribe called the Oconeechee. The Susquehannock, whom they had been pursuing, had come across the Oconeechee before Bacon and his men had arrived. The Oconeechee welcomed Bacon with open arms. When Bacon inquired about the Susquehannock, the Oconeechee king told him what had happened. The Oconeechee had also welcomed the Susquehannock with open arms, and together they shared food and shelter and built two forts around the Oconeechee village. After the forts were built, the Susquehannock turned on them and began to attack the Oconeechee. They began efforts to force the Oconeechee off of their own land so that they could have the forts and the village to themselves. A fight ensued, and the Susquehannock eventually fled, and the Oconeechee kept their land. Now, as Bacon's army arrived, he found the Oconeechee in the midst of preparing for battle against the Susquehannock. Bacon and his men wanted to join them. They had the same enemy. But the Oconeechee were afraid that Bacon's men would ruin the element of surprise attack the Oconeechee had planned. They insisted that the Englishmen stay in the village. Plus, the Oconeechee had been able to contact some of the slaves and captives that the Susquehannock had taken during their raids on other tribes. These captives were more than willing to rise up and help the Oconeechee defeat the Susquehannock when they attacked. It was all planned. Everything was going to be fine. They didn't want any unexpected changes to this plan. So they fed and sheltered the starving rebel army while the warriors went out to battle. The battle was successful, and before long, the Oconeechee returned with their own captives, Susquehannocks that had been kept alive. The Oconeechee king asked Bacon and his men to execute the Susquehannock, but Bacon refused to do so. Even though some of the army no doubt wished to murder all of the Susquehannock, and there were many times when the English did murder other natives, it wasn't unusual to stop the execution of an enemy in order to put them on trial. And this is what Bacon wanted to do. He had already seen how wild murders had resulted in more war, and the colonists deserved closure by seeing justice done to those who were actually guilty of the murders. The Oconeechee, in turn, refused Bacon's request for a trial, and the Oconeechee began the custom of torturing their enemies to death. Now that everything was settled, it should all be fine, right? Their enemy was defeated. Nobody was in danger any longer. What issue could there be? Well, the issue first came in the form of withholding food. It wasn't long before the Oconeechee king began to do to the Englishmen what the Susquehannock had done to them. They turned on them. At first, it was the Oconeechee king deciding to withhold the food he had promised to the English. This was promised to them so they would have enough food to return home. Bacon and his men insisted they be given the promised food, but the Oconeechee king returned to the village and refused to speak with them anymore. On top of that, the Oconeechee king began to line the riverbanks and the protective walls of the village with armed warriors. If Bacon and his army left to return home, they would likely starve on the way. If they stayed, they would be attacked, and without food, they would starve here as well. Some of the Okinichi in the houses outside of the village saw that a fight was inevitable. They ran from their houses towards the village, but Bacon and his men stopped them from entering. They would not allow more people into a position to fight them from behind the walls, and they would have the added protection of the Okinichi not wanting to kill any tribe members who were around the rebel army. Perhaps this was enough to open a negotiation with the Okinichi. If they would just give them the food they had promised, the rebel army would be on their way, back to their homes in the Virginia towns. But it didn't turn out this way. From across the river, one of the warriors shot into the crowd of Englishmen, and one of the rebels fell down dead. The time for patience was over. Bacon ordered an immediate attack on everyone and everything. The rebels fired on the village, while others ran up to the houses outside the village and fired inside. In this, Bacon's men murdered innocent women, children, and men. Many of them fled from their houses only to be butchered when they reached outside. Fire was set to one of the two parts of the village. Only three or four of the Okinichi escaped the flames. Among the victims were the wife and children of the Okinichi king. The Okinichi king himself was not inside with them, and so he was still alive. The next day, the fighting continued. There were several times when the Okinichi left the village to hide behind trees and fire on the English from there. But Bacon and his men were well accustomed to this style of fighting and knew how to hide themselves so as not to be hit. In addition to this, they knew how to hit their own targets during this style of fighting and were able to kill most of the Okinichi who were behind the trees. Finally, the Okinichi made one last attempt to kill the English. The Okinichi king rushed out with 20 of his warriors and surrounded the Englishmen in a wide circle, raving and shooting at them as best as they could. But they were unsuccessful in this too. The Okinichi king and most of his warriors were killed. Of the 20, only 7 escaped. They fled from the fight, and the rest of the Okinichi in the village gathered their wives and children and fled as well. Bacon and his men didn't chase after them. Instead, they went into the village where they gathered food and supplies and turned their horses to the river, back to the way of home. Let's head back to Jamestown for a minute. While all of this was happening, Governor Berkeley had called together his council and asked them what the people wanted. What should he do, you know, other than allowing them to defend themselves, to make them happy? The council told him that the people wanted a new assembly to be elected. Calls for new elections were coming in from all over the colony. Long had it been that the people considered the assembly as nothing more than an extension of the governor. He controlled who was on the governor's council side of the assembly, and he had the counties committing fraud to ensure that only those he wanted elected got elected to the other side of the assembly. He controlled the police, he controlled the courts, he controlled everything, and he was doing a terrible job of it. It had been around 15 years since the last election. The people were ready for it. They demanded it. Berkeley agreed to this and allowed the elections to occur without any of his usual fraud. If anyone had a complaint he wished to bring against him or his government, he would allow them to do so by bringing it to the assembly. In addition to this, he agreed to stop using the ineffective forts. When Bacon and his men returned from the forest, they found the colony preparing for the new election. Bacon was thrilled and looked forward to changes in the government. He wasn't so happy, however, that the governor had declared them to be rebels and had even threatened to hang Bacon himself. His army stopped off in Henrico, where they gathered in one of the courthouses. While they were there, the sheriff of Henrico held up the proclamation declaring them all rebels and began to read it to them. But he was interrupted by Bacon, who told him, "If you dare read a line of that proclamation, I will make you regret it." The elections quickly came and went. The majority of the new elected side of the assembly was made up of Bacon's supporters. It was actually almost entirely made up of people who supported Bacon. On top of that, Bacon himself was elected as the representative of Henrico. Even though it had been the Okinichi who had defeated the Susquehannock, the purpose was still the same. The people were safe. Now they could focus on other things. Bacon had often spoken of the changes needed in the government. things like lower taxes, less corruption, and elections that were not hand-in-hand with fraud. The people hoped he and his supporters would deliver, and it turned out that they would not be disappointed. Bacon deeply resented the idea that the men going out and defending themselves should be treated like criminals. While in Henrico, he wrote to Governor Berkeley, stating that he was sorry to find that the homes and possessions of his army had been seized, and that the governor had been misinformed of the army's intentions. He told the governor that he has all along detested mutiny and rebellion, and that if the governor had been present with them, they would have followed and obeyed him as the army's leader. He then continued in a somewhat different tone. He told the governor that if he wanted to punish the army for treason, then the governor should take a look at his own treasonous acts of bribery, cowardice, and lies. He further stated that he knew the governor's wife had been spreading false rumors about Bacon, and that he could say a thing or two about her. Governor Berkeley received the letter and took it to his council, where he asked for their advice on how to respond. They told him that he should offer Bacon a pardon, but he would have to submit himself and apologize in front of everyone in the assembly. The other offer they should give him is for a trial. A trial would likely result in Bacon being found guilty of treason and hanged, and everyone knew this. Even though Bacon was now an elected member of the assembly, and the governor had offered to pardon him if he submitted and apologized, it was still a great risk for him to return to Jamestown. Jamestown was the center of the governor's power. The people of Virginia, even in Jamestown, widely supported Bacon, but the governor could arrest and hang him if that's what he wanted to do. But, seeing as the rebellion had ended, and he was elected to the assembly, Bacon had to eventually go to Jamestown. His friends, however, wouldn't let him go without protection. They surrounded him with 50 armed men, and together they rowed down the James River to Jamestown. Once they reached a little bit away from the town, they anchored their boat and sent word to the governor that they were there. They asked if Bacon would be allowed to enter Jamestown without fear of his life or imprisonment. The governor replied by heading up to one of the forts along the river and firing on Bacon and his men. The men quickly escaped, only for Bacon to return later that night with 20 of his men. When their boat was discovered, an alarm was sounded. Men filled boats to pursue Bacon. They were given orders to capture or sink them. It wasn't until the next day that Bacon was surrounded and forced to surrender. He was taken aboard one of the larger ships and then taken ashore, where he was brought before the governor. It seemed all was well, and the governor was once again in control. But that was not the way things were to be. That's all for today. Thanks for tuning in. Join us next week when we discuss how Bacon submits and is pardoned, changes come to the assembly, and things spiral out of control again with Bacon once more leading a rebel army, this time against the governor himself. See you next time on Why Wars Happened.